Blog Talk Radio.
It's that time, guys. And it's the Next Space Show with Al and Joe. This is K-Wad Radio, and we are here on Sunday night. So glad to have you aboard. I see a couple of people have already logged in, and yes, you guys are ready to rock and roll, and so are we. Got a lot of things to go over, but before we do that, we're going to go over the calendar really fast. This is the local calendar, as I see it. Glendale Chocolate Affair is on the 30th and 31st. That's next weekend. And on Wednesday, the 28th, we have the Hate Girl Show, 8 o'clock to 10 p.m. And this week, we have the American Long Spurs on. So this is a music show. Hate Girl Show is an Americana show. It's all independent music. And we like to, you know, showcase the independent musical groups, because we think that, you know, again, they're part of the creative people that we love and adore. So we get them involved. What else do we have going on? Wow, that's the end of the month. And can you believe January's already over? Obviously, even though it'll be a Super Bowl, we're still going to be here next Sunday, even though the Super Bowl's going. Yeah. So, for those, you know, of you geeks who don't like Super Bowl and don't care about Super Bowl, even though it's in Arizona, we don't care about Super Bowl. It's on the other side of town, which is a good thing. It's in Glendale. We're not in Glendale, so thank goodness. So Super Bowl, of course, is in Arizona, and so are we. We're in Phoenix. We're in an area called Mesa, which is on the other side of the world to Glendale, which is where all the things are happening. So, but we'll be here anyway. So, 7 p.m. next Sunday, we'll be here again. Doesn't matter if Super Bowl or not. So, and again, we've got a lot of topics to talk about. Just to remind you, the phone number, call-in phone number, is 714-242-5145, and this is Manned Space. So if you have anything to talk to us about Manned Space, please definitely call in. But we don't talk about religion, we don't talk about politics unless it has something to do with Manned Space. So keep it relevant, guys. Okay. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce you ready? Al said he's ready. That's a good thing. So we're on a go. Now, as a reminder, we've got the information going underneath the chat, right underneath the show. We give you guys all of the links that we're talking about as we're talking. So I add the links, and you guys can click on them or copy and paste them so that way you guys can go through them later. Again, this show is archived right after we get done talking. About half an hour after the show, it goes to archive mode, and so it's a gift that keeps on giving. You guys can keep on, you can go back and listen, especially if you're having problems keeping your login, which apparently a couple of people are having some trouble staying online. So, well, we hope you can stay online and listen. But if you can't and you have some problems with staying online, again, this goes in archive mode, and you can listen at your leisure at any time. Also, go back to previous episodes and listen to them as well. So, without further ado, this is Al and Joe, and this is Al. Hey, Al.
Hey there. Been a busy week.
I guess so.
Challenging week. I know. I know a lot of people are preparing for the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Super Bowl, and you know, I had to giggle today. I was watching I was glancing at one of the signs, and it's X Super Bowl XLIX. Now, I don't know my my Roman numerals that well.
XLIX.
XLIX.
IX is 9.
It's like, okay.
So XL. Yeah, that's where I get lost.
Was it like 49?
No, it's like 20. Well, no, it's got to be.
I thought it was like 49.
You know, here it is.
But anyway.
Right here
anyway,
in Arizona,
anyway.
we don't even know what freaking number it is.
Yeah. I am not
a fan of
any kind of spectator sports. I do enjoy a game every once in a while, and I'll kind of get sucked into watching them every once in a while if they're on the TV and various different places I go. But I had to, with all the things going on with not only the Super Bowl, but other games leading up to the bowl.
There's always that, isn't
there? There's always
and always
the stuff
going around about the
Super
Bowl this week.
And these years, in these past few years, there's been the hoopla about the commercials and all the scandalous things going on.
Scandalous things.
But
we don't have a scandal.
But I wanted to share something here. There was this stray thought, and you got to watch people like us because these stray thoughts, they get us in trouble. They get us into serious trouble.
What is this?
Stray thoughts.
Oh, stray thoughts.
You know, when you look at something on a wall,
I don't know anything about stray thoughts.
your mind goes somewhere, and it gives you a thought, and it's like, oh, my God. Or, I didn't really think that kind of thing, you know? Okay, I kid you not. I looked at the sign one point in the day today. I guess I must have been really tired. And I didn't see XLIX.
You saw XXX?
I saw XLAX.
Oh, my goodness.
I was tired.
Yeah,
apparently. I had to be tired.
Definitely. Well, you did 12 hours at 18, so there you go.
But it was just one of those moments. I did a double take because it did remind it XLIX. Okay, could have been an A.
Maybe you needed some. I don't know.
I don't think I needed it.
Well, definitely running off at the brain.
Hey, after an all day binge on chips and salsa yesterday, I definitely did not need any XLIX.
Well, I figured we got our chips and salsa done early, so we wouldn't have to worry about the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know.
That's for sure. Well, let's get right into it.
Yeah.
We're going to start with news from NASA. This week, actually tomorrow's Monday. At least
yeah,
I think
Monday.
It is, right?
Yeah, tomorrow's Monday.
From Sunday to Monday? Yeah, so it's a Monday.
Yeah.
NASA's going to outline. Oh, I'm sorry. That's a different article. See, now I'm getting ahead of myself. See, you're confusing me tonight.
You are space flight.
Yeah, okay.
Space flight.
NASA outlines why it passed over Sierra Nevada. Now, NASA cited recently the complexity of Sierra Nevada's Dream Chaser space plane and an uncertainty of when the proposed crew transport craft would be ready to fly astronauts to the ISS. Now, and that's the primary reason that the agency picked Boeing and SpaceX for lucrative contracts to develop commercial space taxis. Now, the Sierra Nevada's Dream Chaser... What? You're playing with a microphone. What's up?
I'm just making sure that they can hear you.
Oh, okay. All right. The Dream Chaser spacecraft is intended to take off on top of a ULA Atlas V and land on a runway like the shuttle. And, of course, it's not quite as far along as the CST-100 and the Crew Dragon. Now, you got to give them credit, though. It is a competing spacecraft. They are making progress.
Yeah,
they're not. They don't seem to be having near the troubles that Virgin Galactic has had in the last several months.
Well, I think Virgin's
the engines
gotten, I think
and
it gotten
like
scared.
That.
Virgin's gotten a little scared. So.
Well, what gives you that idea? You get scared of what?
Well, because they went boom. whenever anybody goes boom, it gives you pause and reflection there.
Well, see, that depends on how old you are and
what you're booming, I guess.
Yeah, well, see, there you go. There are those that a boom comes by and people get excited.
Yeah,
all right.
That is true. I mean, look at Goal.
Pop Your Science ran an article talking about ion thrusters on the NASA missions, redraw the boundaries of space exploration. Now, in early March, the Dawn spacecraft is going to enter the orbit of the dwarf planet Ceres. We've been starting to see some of the photos come back on this. It's just starting out to get a little blurry, but they're starting to clear up as we go forward. We're going to see a whole new world, says Mark Raymond, Dawn's chief engineer and mission director. 8 years since its launch and 4 years after visiting the second largest object in the asteroid belt, Vesta, Dawn will be the first spacecraft to orbit two alien protoplanets in a single mission. Now, that achievement is made possible by its ion engines, which are about a foot in diameter. Now, these are not great big huge engines. I mean, a foot, that's just barely 12 inches. Well, and I think a lot of times people don't realize.
I think a foot is 12 inches here.
Yeah, that's what I said.
You said it's about.
I said that's just 12 inches.
Oh, okay.
And don't be quibbling about my words here. But
I just wanted to make sure you knew.
I just think it's interesting that when people think that's not very big, is it?
It's teeny.
Yeah, by comparison to what we normally think about in terms of rockets, when they're as big as a frickin' bus.
Well, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You look at Saturn V, they were even bigger than the length of
a
bus.
It's a mini-me.
Oh, this is smaller than a mini-me.
It's a mini-me compared
to... You know,
it's
actually, you know, if you really want to find out about ion propulsion, go Google it, check out Wikipedia. They've got a lot of good articles on it. It's actually been around quite a while. It's been in use on several spacecraft over the years. But this is exciting about the ion propulsion and actually about being able to see Ceres close up. Now, moving on, documents show how Boeing and SpaceX won commercial crew amid schedule concerns. Now, recently released government documents evaluating the proposal were concerned about the ability of the three competitors to stay on schedule. The document says Boeing had the best scores of the three companies in two key parameters, mission stability and past performance. They've been doing it for how many decades? They've been part of the space program. They better be good at those two things. And Boeing had a rating of excellent in the two major mission suitability areas, technical and managerial, and very high in past performance, the highest ratings offered. Both Sierra Nevada and SpaceX got the next highest ratings, very good, in the mission suitability areas and high in the past performance. And basically, I have a bit of a problem here because while I do understand that SpaceX and Sierra Nevada are newcomers to this process, there's a completely different approach in their designs and also in their progress and in their business model. Whereas Boeing is still working on business cost plus contracts and that kind of thinking where they're not going to risk anything unless the government agrees to pay for it. SpaceX and Sierra Nevada have the ideal in front of their heads. They're going to go forward, and in fact, Sierra Nevada.
Whether they're funded or not.
Exactly. Yeah. In fact, Sierra Nevada, since they were dropped from the contract competition, is still pushing forward, albeit with a slightly scaled down program.
I think that's awesome.
I think it is too. We seriously need that kind of competition.
Yeah.
If the nascent space program is going to get off of the ground as an industry, it's got to have competitive components to it in order to progress. Moving on, you know, there is a growing debate about the value of robots over actually sending people.
Yeah.
And I think we've talked before about how I was really astounded.
That's insane, I know.
I really hate it because robots, I mean, in as many years, the robots on Mars are traveling so slow.
Yeah. You want to get over there and actually push it along, you know?
Well, the thing is...
get in the proverbial butt.
Right. And the challenges that the rovers face, we had one of the rovers ended up with a broken wheel. We had another rover whose Curiosity, I believe it is, wheels are deteriorating. There are a boatload of issues that the robots... face.
They can't go to the nearest discount tire. Yeah. Them, you know.
And despite the fact that they've all exceeded their design tenure.
Yeah.
They're definitely working a heck of a lot longer than than they were intended to survive. Again, this is kudos to the designers. But one of the things that's coming up in this debate between robots and humans is that NASA and Microsoft teamed up to develop software called OnSite, a new tech that will enable scientists to work virtually on Mars using wearable technology called Microsoft HoloLens. And in fact, this has been in the news recently as Microsoft is releasing this in other venues. Now, the document...
Other venues?
Well, other market areas. They're beginning to make it available in other areas for computer programmers and so forth. Developed by NASA's Jet Propulsion, JPL, in Pasadena, OnSite will give scientists a means to plan and, along with the Mars Curiosity rover, conduct science operations on the planet. Now, the thing to remember is that basically this is a get the data from the Mars rover, apply the software, and make decisions about what's coming up in the future. This isn't a live, real-time VR program, which would be really way cool. It would be absolutely way cool. The problem with that, of course, is the time delay.
Yeah, of course.
So, and that also adds some of the quandary that they face in giving the rovers instructions on how they move forward and why they must move forward so slowly.
Yeah, we actually, you were showing me one other time how a delay, you're not being able to watch the rover moving, and you're able to, and you realize what problems they would have.
Yeah.
Not being able to see it because, you know, one wall is huge and
oh,
it's
yeah.
not even a wall.
We, just for the listeners, so you understand what the heck we're talking about here. We built a simulated teleoperated rover here. And it was actually, we had it at a couple of parties. We showed it out at a couple of events. Kids loved it. It was challenging to the adults. We even made a couple of videos. And what we discovered is it's a lot harder to learn to drive the thing.
Sure.
Because your perspectives are off
yeah.
When you're using yeah. the cameras on the device.
I got into the gutter, and I'm going like, what in the heck is
what
that?
What is that great big black
what
thing?
What is that great big thing in front of the car? Only to find out that was the curb.
Well, and yeah. So things are way out of perspective,
yeah.
even if you've got stereoscopic vision on the rover. So
yeah.
a lot of challenges. And the idea of using VR is a great, great idea. It's a great option. And I'm sure it will have offer some new opportunities that they haven't had in the past for better assessing the situation, better assessing where the rover's going and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing like being there and touching things to be able to move forward quickly. We'll be coming back to this discussion about some of the issues facing rovers versus humans. Moving on to international news, singer Sarah Brightman in training for space tourist role in Moscow, Russia. Ms. Brightman has started a grueling 72-hour survival course in a snowy Russian forest to train for upcoming role as a space tourist. Russia's Cosmonaut Training Center said Friday, a soprano known for starring roles in West End musicals composed by her ex-husband, Andrew Lloyd Webber, is due to spend 10 days in space in September after paying around $52 million to become the eighth space tourist in a flight arranged by U.S. Space Adventures.
Wow.
So, you know, this is and, you know, it's interesting to remember that Space Adventures has been incremental in not just this one, but several of the... In fact, almost all of the space tourists that have gone up to the International Space Station. They are the, what do they call it? Travel agent to space in this day and age.
Yeah, yeah.
They have negotiated far more than, I mean, consider the miles covered in this. I mean, you're talking.
Man, that would be so cool.
To go into space?
Frequent flyer miles.
Oh, there you go.
I know. Yeah.
All right. In Europe, the European Space Agency has outlined its vision for what lunar exploration could be in the future in a new video released on the internet today. It comes in the wake of a decision to look, and actually this was done on the 20th. It comes in the wake of a decision to look into collaborating with the Russians over sending a lander to the moon's south pole. The video is general and contains no reference to any specific future missions, but it is interesting because it seems to suggest that ESA would see a return to the moon's surface as a precursor to going elsewhere. Again, also another interesting point that many of the government programs are looking at the idea of going to the moon first in order to use the moon as a stepping stone to get to Mars. Well, they're looking at it.
They are looking at it.
And we know how slow governments make decisions.
Yeah. Slow enough that they forget what they were thinking about when they...
Right. Moving on. Organizers of Africa to Moon hope to inspire and educate a new generation of engineers and scientists, as well as shattering prejudices in the rest of the world that often paint this as a hopeless, dependent, and scientifically illiterate continent. The ultimate ambition, which would take a decade, is to put a probe on the lunar surface or in orbit around it, then beam back live pictures via the internet to classrooms all over Africa. It will also be a platform for experiments proposed by scientists, but Weltman believes the journey is as important as the destination. Every year there will be a related project inviting mass participation. And this is a theme, this represents a theme that I think is beginning to grow and get stronger as the months go on, and that is that participation and mass participation.
Yeah.
The idea that getting to either the moon or Mars isn't going to happen unless we've got a lot of people involved in some way.
It's a crowdfunding one that you told me about.
No. Well, yeah, this one is a crowdfunding mission.
Mm-hmm.
They're using, I forget which of the crowdfunding units,
I'll find out.
Yeah, there you go. One. You go ahead and do that while we move on. Into private space and new space companies. This Monday, tomorrow, NASA, SpaceX, and Boeing Commercial Crew is going to hold a briefing, 12 p.m. Eastern Time. Now, the representatives will host the briefing in Houston to update the public about the progress of the Commercial Crew program starting at 12 noon Eastern Time. NASA's Commercial Crew program is designed to create a private fleet of Boeing and spaceships to from NASA. You can watch the conference live on
Ustream.
NASA TV, Ustream.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and the link is, we're putting up the Ustream link to NASA TV for you as well. And then moving on, SpaceX and the Air Force have settled their dispute over the military launches. And SpaceX saying it has worked out a path forward with the Air Force that will let the California-based company compete for national security space launches. As a result of the agreement, SpaceX is dropping its legal challenge to a military satellite launch contract that the Air Force awarded to ULA last year. Now moving on also to another... Right, what? What are you doing?
Okay,
you having trouble keeping up? Well, come on, get with the...
Well, you talk, you're talking too fast. You don't see over.
No.
No?
We've got a substantial amount of material here to go through this week. There's been a lot happening.
Yay.
So anyway, we've got... Now, you remember, many of you may remember last time, now over the last month, there was news that SpaceX... acquired lease on the space complex at Cape Canaveral. Well, a second company, California-based Moon Express, which seeks to extract and exploit lunar resources, will base its spacecraft development flight test operations at Space Launch Complex 36. Moon Express signed the SLC 36 agreement with Space Florida, the state's Aerospace Economic Development Agency. The launch facility was decommissioned in 2007, but in 2010, the Air Force issued licenses to Space Florida with the aim of making SL-36.
Keep going.
Okay, just checking.
Yes.
Kind of moving stuff around here. Confusing me.
Checking.
With the aim of making SLC-36 available for commercial use, Moon Express representative shared. Now, Moon Express plans to fly government and commercial payloads to the moon and eventually aims to mine lunar resources such as water, ice, metals, helium-3, as a potential lunar fusion, nuclear fusion reactors. Now, the company has a coffee-table-sized lunar lander called MX-1, whose first trip to the moon is scheduled to occur soon as part of the $30 million Google Lunar X Prize competition. And we've actually got two links for you on that one, two different references to bring out different different points. Crowdfunded lunar mission will put donors' hair on the moon. A crowdfunded moon lander that will drill deep into the lunar surface to study rocks that formed soon after the birth of the solar system has been announced by a British organization. Lunar Mission 1 aims to transform how space exploration is done by covering the cost of expeditions with millions of small payments from the public instead of a major investment from national space agencies. Now, this is a cool idea. Crowdfunding. And we've talked about this briefly before. But the problem that I have with it is that, you know, if you're going to crowdfund something, the trend in crowdfunding today, and you and I were having this conversation the other day, is that in crowdfunding, the biggest trend is for people who are trying to produce some marketable product, be it a comic book, be it a film, a book, some 3D printers were crowdfunded that way, or a game, absolutely. And so a lunar mission is going to be a challenge, and I haven't looked at the crowdfunding campaign. I need to go look at that. It's on Kickstarter. It presents special problems because everybody is still going to be donating without a lot of return on investment, and that's something that I think is a key issue, that the public needs to, at some point, have a return on investment other than either a certificate or a piece of rock or the knowledge that they've sent some hair up there. So I think there's... Okay. Cher, what was that? Something caused you to giggle.
I need to see an alien getting on the moon and going like, hair? Where did the hair come from?
This is biological material. What's that doing here? Oh. All right. Now we're on to our next segment of the show. When we talk about related tech. And in related tech, we look at things that either are contributing or very well could contribute to putting people into space long term. Our first story comes from, where is this? I believe it's Japan. And basically, the incredible indoor food factory in Japan is claiming that it can produce 100 times more heads of lettuce per day than an outdoor counterpart of the same area, and also produces 80% less food waste. The entire thing is stored inside a building measuring around 2,500 square meters, 25,000 square feet, and now versions of the setup are being built in Hong Kong with future construction planned in Russia, mainland China, and Mongolia. Now, there's two references to this, one from Science Alert, one from National Geographic. The National Geographic actually provides just a little bit more detail, albeit it's a bit older. The thing about this is the one thing I questioned about the article is, and I was kind of disappointed, they don't talk about whether it's hydroponic, aquaponic, or some other derivative of those technologies. And I find it interesting because the one thing that they do point out the most is that the farm uses a particularly unique form of LED lighting for the plants. The idea being that it stimulates a longer growth cycle and more in-depth growth. And so forth of the plants, so that they could generate these, what you said, 100 times more productive than outdoor fields. The other thing is that my reading has generated that if it's hydroponics, that wouldn't make sense because that uses oftentimes more water than an outdoor field, which would leave the suggestion that it's a form of aquaponics, which recycles the water and so forth, but they're adding nutrients. So there are some questions here, and I'd be interested. No. Somebody finds out, let us know. Moving on. Again, we're talking about food again. CNN's Dr. Sanjay Gupta learns how space food is developed, and then he's put through some workouts as the astronauts. Now, this is a video. He test tastes some food, talks to one of the nutritionists, and then jumps into the exercise program and goes through three machines the astronauts use to reduce bone loss in zero-G. This was real interesting. And that machine is scary. Simply because it's not like the exercise machines we use here on Earth, which you got a stationary bike. It's stationary. It doesn't go anywhere. Weightlifting thing. It not only do you push up, But your feet move at the same time. It's not like you're pushing against a floor and doing your lifts. This whole thing moves and articulates.
Remember Wizard of Oz?
Okay.
At one point when the Twister takes the you know, Dorothy's house and it goes up into the Twister and is spinning around and around.
Yeah, I'm not
and
seeing
then
a relation
then
here.
And then she's still inside the house, right?
Yeah.
And she sees, you know, the wicked woman who's chattered dog and you know, her...
Oh, the bicycle flying through the Twister.
Yeah,
okay.
I was just thinking about how that would be. Probably the look of the stationary bike up in space.
I just told you it's not a stationary bike in space. I mean, it kind of sort of is.
It's floating, right?
Well, kind of, sort of, but it's not really a bicycle. And you don't sit on a seat with it. That was also the thing that was weird.
Okay.
There's no seat.
Okay, that's just...
You got to look at the video. It's really intriguing.
Man.
You got to check out the video
because
it's really interesting how that works.
Yeah,
but,
definitely, guys. You can take a look at that.
Oh, yeah. Some of that's really odd. And, you know, we often think about space food, and we think in terms of what we saw in the Apollo program or the space shuttle, the early parts of the space shuttle where they were eating out of tubes and most of it was kind of mushy goo and kind of not very appetizing. But they're actually eating on plates and forks nowadays. And they're eating like potatoes and salmon and they're actually eating what we call real food that's being shipped up. Now, it is dehydrated when they get it, so they dehydrate it, they cook it, and boom, they're done. And they're actually getting full meals.
Pizza Hut.
Oh, yeah.
Boy, that's a
the 19 most surprising facts about space food. I'm just going to give you the first couple here. Apparently, Pizza Hut delivered the first and only pizza to outer space. The reason that was the only one is there were some problems. Check out the article. Carbonated drinks like Coke.
Other than a $1 billion tab. You know,
delivery fee. There you go. Carbonated drinks, number two, are like Coke and Pepsi, are actually banned because they make you vomit in space.
Well, yeah.
No, that makes you kind of...
Shaking you up there.
Shaking you up and spewing all over the place. Oh, my goodness. And in third, in 1985, the media ridiculed Mexican scientist Rodolfo Nerivela for requesting tacos in space. But actually, the interesting part of that story is tacos are one of the most popular food.
Yeah.
That they enjoy eating.
You're supposed to be able to...
There was a side story with this that talked about the flour tortillas. One of the problems NASA was having early on had to do with keeping the tortillas fresh for as long as 6 months. And they just weren't getting the longevity they wanted. Come to find out, they turned to Taco Bell.
Who would know how to keep...
Who had one of their providers who had worked it all out and could store flour tortillas for much longer than 6 months. But I got to tell you.
I wouldn't taste very good.
Well, actually, I guess they do because they're still very
hot. Well, I used to work at Taco Bell way back when. And there's certain shelf life for tacos and shells because they start getting stale.
Well, sure. Most foods do. So you got to wonder, what are they doing to these tacos
honestly,
to make them last that kind of length?
That's called unnatural.
Space is unnatural for humans.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
There's no way to keep that stuff. And it's not supposed to be in the human body. But, hey.
Here's a gallery I think you all will like. I remember many times looking at some of the artist renditions of what some of the big settlements would look like in space as we go forward. Go check out this gallery. The enclosed living spaces reminiscent of many artist renditions of space habitats, particularly on the moon or on Mars. Typically, we see those in domed facilities. Well, check these things out. These are four gasometers. That originally housed four gigantic gas tanks with a brick facade. Each one was 230 feet tall, 197 feet in diameter, and with a storage capacity of over 3 million cubic feet each. Once used for the storage of coal gas, the gasometers were retired in 1984 as the city shifted over to natural gas. By 1981, they were classified as a heritage buildings due to their unique architecture and thus escaped demolition. Now, despite random use since the closing of the plant, for example, the setting of the James Bond movie, The Living Daylights, things have changed, and now they've actually built apartment units and housing complexes and office complexes inside these cylindrical buildings.
Wow.
It's fascinating. Check out the gallery. I think you'll appreciate it. It is a related tech. It is architecture, building inside a building. And I cannot imagine the challenges that they faced when they gutted the tank out and were left with the brick facade and then had to build buildings inside this structure, which represents some of the challenges that we will face when we do start getting buildings, building structures in orbit that will actually house housing components as we get going. Now, also in related technology, the Internet's been a buzz this week. The Internet space race is shaping up to be a wild ride. SpaceX confirmed it raised $1 billion in financing from Google and Fidelity, which will help the company push ahead with its plan to create a space-based global Internet service. Now, space-based applications like imaging satellites can help people more easily access important information. So we're excited to support SpaceX growth as it develops new launch technologies. Now, that was a comment from Google spokesperson who was talking to ABC News in a statement. Of course, this is an article from abcnews.go.com for their technology area. So, yeah, check out that article. Definitely some interesting reading. There are also multiple sites on the web that have been carrying that particular component. So, with that, actually, we got through that a lot faster than I expected tonight.
Just so you guys know, I put up the links that he's going to be talking about during the commentary.
In our commentary, I came across two opposing op-ed pieces talking about going to Mars. Right. Michael Meneker from, let me get my notes up here. Michael Meneker is a professor of biology at the University of Virginia and has conducted Mars-related basic research on circadian rhythms for NASA. Talks about why humans shouldn't go to Mars. And then in the alternative, John Strickland, a member of the board of directors of the National Space Society and an advocate with the Space Frontier Foundation, talks about his views about why we should go to Mars. And we will be coming back with our commentary and summaries of these two points of view for you in just a few minutes. We're going to take a break, station identification, and give our engineer here time to run a commercial or two. If you don't trip over the cables.
Trip over the cables. Of course, I had to find one.
Come on, give it a program, engineer.
Why don't you come on out to the Hey Girls Americana radio show, hosted by Song River and Carol Pacey of Carol Pacey and the Honey Shakers. All coming to you live on KWOD Independent Internet Radio, broadcasting from the Ice House Tavern in Phoenix, Arizona. All sound recorded and mixed by Vintage Note Records. Come on out, check out the show, and then visit the website at blogtalkradio.com/KWOD radio. We'll see y'all out there.
Now, the Hey Girls music show, as we just had a station identification for, is going to be this Wednesday at 8 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, which is also Arizona time. And just to let you know what else is going on in February, we're going to be at the amazing Arizona Comic Con. That's downtown Phoenix, Amazing Arizona Comic Con, 13, 14, 15, so over Valentine's Day. So I know where I'm going to be. All right, the man, the tables, of course, obviously, and we have brand new books and authors are going to be sitting at the table, so we're excited to have everybody on board, and we'll do a couple shows while we're there with these brand new authors. So, and of course, also Al's going to be there with his book. So, our books, plural. One is actually nonfiction, so it's a brand new one. Woohoo! So, definitely, if you're in the area, come on out and, you know, check out Amazing Arizona Comic Con. On the 21st, we got publishing and marketing meetup for authors, 12:30 to 2:30. Take a look at the meetup on the writing groups in order to find out more information and the location. Again, we'll have another Hey Girl show. Makeshift Skyline, we are going to have on the February 25th, 8-10 p.m. So, that we're going to take a 1 minute and 59 second hiatus here, and you guys can get your drink and then get ready to commentary. And, you know, again, the phone number here is 714-242-5145. You know, it doesn't have to just be Al's opinion. Other people can chime in the cast. Again, keep it to the commentary at hand. That'd be great. Thank you. And we'll be right back. On that one. This is the Next Base Show with Al and Joe, and I am Joe, and this is Al.
Welcome back, folks.
Hope you have a drink, because we're just ready to rock and roll and talk about this.
Yeah.
Let's mix it up.
One of the things that's been hitting the internet, actually for quite some time now, in the last couple of years, particularly since SpaceX, Boeing, and the CCT cap. Well, whatever the heck it is, the commercial crew, is this idea that, well, where are we going next? We've heard discussions about NASA not having a clear and directed plan beyond one next destination, and I think that's true, but also that's to a certain point, there seems to be some contention growing in the thing that for some people, we don't need to send people to Mars. And some people say, yes, we need to send people to Mars. And more specifically, there was an op-ed on the Richmond Times Daily this past week from a gentleman, Michael Meneker, as professor of biology at the University of Virginia. And he's conducted Mars-related basic research on circadian rhythms for NASA. And in his piece, and I encourage you to read it and think about it, because he talks about some basic points of why not. In the article, he talks about the aspect that to go to Mars and to come back is a minimum, absolute minimum of a year. And primarily, if you hit the time right, in fact, our next opposition, our closest opposition for many years, is coming up in 2018. If a crew launched towards Mars in 2018, I forget which month it is, that would take around 5 to 6 months to get there, again, using current technology. Now, the second item that he points out is, and I'm sorry, before I move on, but the challenge is that when it comes time for them to come back, assuming they're able to spend 6 months there, so you got 6 months to get there, 6 months to stay there, it's going to be at least a year and probably closer to 18 months for the travel time to get back to Earth. Now, that then presents huge risks to the human crew. Isolation, radiation, other hazards, micrometeorites, all sorts of stuff that could happen. And that doesn't even include the issues that they're going to face maintaining their habitat, whatever form it will take on Mars during their sojourn. Then there's the expense, estimated at over $5 billion plus for a single mission to Mars and returning. The ethical issues of a one-way as opposed to a sample return come into play when we look at sending people to Mars either on a one-way trip, and of course everybody gets down to the nitty-gritty and says, well, what are the kids going to be like? And what are their challenges? And can you actually have kids in the lowered gravity? Lots of questions we have not yet answered. And you're dooming these people. I actually saw a post where it said that those people who take the one-way trip are doomed to all of the doom and gloom issues that they would face on the low gravity, no oxygen atmosphere of Mars. And that's
You know what? Those people who want doom and gloom, they can just stay here.
Sure. I think it's a good point.
We didn't ask them to go.
Hang on, because there's other points that Meneker shares that come into play.
Too.
And one of those points, the next point he makes is the robots work well instead of humans. And we're going to talk about that in just a few minutes.
Okay.
And Earthbound problems to solve rather than spending all of this money in space. Now, those are the key points that he brings up in his op-ed, why humans should not go to Mars. Now, Mr. Strickland, on the other hand, presents an alternative point of view. Now, Mr. Strickland, John Strickland, is a member of the board of directors of the National Space Society and an advocate with the Space Frontier Foundation. Now, here he does not necessarily speak for any organization. The views are his own. But he makes some intriguing counterpoints. And he starts out and points out the conflict of interest in human versus robotic missions, because most of the people who are running robotic missions are taking money away from other projects that could be dealt with of issues here on Earth. So, and
that's a reason to go.
Well, no. The point he's making here is that people who work on robotic missions have a job. That job is to work on a robotic mission. If we start sending humans, then that means we're going to be sending less robots, which means they're going to be out of a job. So there's a certain amount of conflict of interest here. Okay? And granted, they might actually just be able to shift over to the human mission and so forth.
Still
robotics
then.
Well, sure. Sure. The next thing is time. But this isn't new. I mean, think about this. Even today, sailors make they spend time on ships anywhere from 6 months to a year or more, where they are in isolation as they cross the seas. Yeah, they get to stop in at ports of call. But you still have people, particularly some of our Navy seamen, mm-hmm. who spend 6 months or more at sea
yeah.
in a submarine.
Yeah.
And that's about as cramped as it gets.
Yeah.
And when you're under the ocean, you're talking huge amounts of pressure, and that's got to tell. That's got to prey heavily upon
Makes
your psyche.
You short.
Huh?
It'll shorten you.
Okay, we're going to leave that one alone and move on. Now, as far as
submarines, and they're small.
Yeah, as far as risks such as isolation, radiation, and other hazards, ancient mariners and even some mariners today risk life and limb at sea in strange ports. I mean,
every day, just
going down the street in New York at night is risk to life and limb. Well, any city, yeah, Chicago, Detroit, L.A., any of them, sure. Any of them can present
even Mesa.
Serious danger to life and
limb.
But also, you know, there's
we have cops here, so
when thinking
dangerous.
In terms of risk, it's about the long-term risk.
Yes.
And the long-term risk of radiation, the isolation, mm-hmm. and radiation being key because you stay in space too long and you end up cutting off years of your lifetime if you should happen to get cancer. But then again, that's just
what a way to go.
Well, at the same time, though, getting cancer is not fun.
No.
You know, I don't have personal experience, but
it's not fun no matter what planet you're on.
That's right. And the reality is that whether you get cancer out there or you get cancer back on Earth, it's still
a bitch no matter what.
It's still a bitch.
Yeah.
And there are enough things here between cigarettes and California's got a list of stuff that cause cancer a mile long.
Just driving on freeway.
You know, cell phones. How many of us have cell phones? Okay, there's your radiation thing. So, you know, not to downplay the radiation risk that does indeed exist in traveling in planetary space.
People got to stop sleeping with their
but,
phones.
Well, yeah, I mean, for crying out loud, folks. And then there's the expense. But even on the expense side, we look at projects like the James Webb Telescope, which Mr. Strickland points out is near estimated at near $10 billion, which is at least one, if not two, missions to Mars. So, again, a lot of it's about perspective. Now, ethical issues, as far as one way or returning back, there are reasonable solutions to mitigate the risks that do exist. But even so,
you still
got to
go.
You still got to go. Somebody's got to go.
Got to step forward.
And then lastly, when thinking in terms of the earthbound problems that we have to solve, such as hunger, disease, famine, and then, of course, the challenges to science, these are always going to exist.
Always going to exist. They always have existed.
Absolutely. And so
nothing new.
Right. But I'd like to actually expand on this just a little bit. And I think both of these men miss a far more important point that's becoming clear, or at least in my mind it's becoming clear, in the world as we look at these discussions. There have been a host of articles in the past year alone that have talked about the question that where is NASA's drive? Where is their plan? Where is their direction? Where are they going? People are looking for a direction, a plan that consolidates a multi-mission ideal. NASA, and in fact, quite honestly, all of the missions that we've talked about tonight are one-off projects. Whether it's Lunar Mission 1, it's Africa to the Moon, even the Mars 1 and Mars Inspiration are one-off missions. These are one-shot deals that are going to cost in the millions or billions of dollars just to develop, much less launch. And yet, each and every one of them is a one-off project. And so, this represents a way of thinking that if we don't get off this merry-go-round of the one-off missions,
we are going to continue to spend $5 or $10 billion for one-off missions that will end up going nowhere.
We're spinning our wheels.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's great that people are wanting to do this. I mean, you know, can't say that's not a good thing, but
right.
Some kind of plan, some kind of goal.
And there's another aspect here that I think oftentimes in our enlightened state and age,
your quotation
here. We forget something more more compelling, I think.
Which is?
And that is that we as a species explore in order to grow.
Yeah.
We don't explore for science's sake alone.
No.
And for engineers to sit in their little bubble and think that their mission is going to go do all this wonderful exploration, it's going
pat
to help society and pat each other on the back. This is not why we explore.
No.
We explore as a species because we have growing population pressure. That pressure drives us outward to seek new lands. Mm-hmm. And as our species is growing, I mean, what you look at the Indus Valley migrations that pushed people outward as they looked for new lands to settle, to grow more food, to have more fertile hunting grounds, and all these kind of things. And then from Indus Valley, we had the expansions into Africa, Asia, and Europe. And then from Europe, they came to the Americas and Australia. And now the Americas expanded. You've got countries and nation states on every continent today. We even have people living on Antarctica as well.
Which is crazy.
I mean, you talk about the potential for isolation and the challenges of feeding your crew.
We take them from Antarctica and stick them on the moon.
No.
Oh, come on. They're already isolated.
Yeah, but they're also already crazy.
Which is exactly the issue. They're already nuts.
Yeah.
And cold.
Okay. So the point I'm making here is that the reality is both Mr. Menneker and Mr. Strickland make good points if your focus is about science. And science, scientists...
Or if you're in the Neanderthal and don't want to move anywhere.
Well, I wasn't going to go there, but here's the thing. Science and engineering, STEM, STEAM, however you want to call that, typically follows this whole scientific method thing, which is A, observe, hypothesize, test, and draw conclusions. And then you go back to the same circle. So this whole circle running around, spinning our wheels thing is all part of the engineering approach. And I think that we forget that we are people first, engineers second. And if we are going to grow as a people, and I was doing research for my upcoming book, and I'll be talking about that book in upcoming weeks, what it's about, what we'll be covering, and where it'll be available and so forth. But the thing is in doing the research for the book, I delved a lot into history and found some interesting parallels. Like, you know, we've talked a few times about the migrations of the settlers and the pilgrims, starting that migration to the New World. And it wasn't just North America. Some of these people went to Central America, some went Caribbean, some went to South America. And you had all of the European nations were involved at some point or another. But then you had this move west in America, in the U.S., in the 1800s. You had a move towards Australia in the 1700s. And these were big migrations. We had millions of people over the course of a few decades that were transplanting themselves from one continent to another.
So why did they go?
Why did they go? They went for homes. They went for jobs. They went for opportunities to grow. And I truly believe that until we can get on this bandwagon and remember that NASA, Roscosmos, ESA, JAXA, have all been working hard on the engineering solutions necessary to move people into space. And by people, I mean the average Joes, the guys that are going to go up and do the mining, the guys that are going to go up and be the food service guy at the Bigelow Hotel in Orbit. Okay? These people are going to need resources.
Yeah.
And you're not going to grow food on Earth to feed a large population of people in space. And I got to tell you, I don't care how optimistic an engineer is going to be, we're not going to build a space habitat in Earth orbit or at L1 or L2 that is going to house thousands of people until we can work out an economy in space. And that's not going to happen any other way than it has happened over the centuries on Earth, which is small little cubbyholes of population moving out into the frontier, establishing trading posts. Then the troops come, you get a base, you supply the base, then people come to support the base, they build an economy, and you get farmers that show up and start growing food locally.
Well, I think that farmers are going to have to come, like, very early on.
Well, the ISS has been up there 20 years, and they've been supplying food up there through Progress, and now it's a very strip thing.
That's onesies, twosies.
That's onesies, twosies. They're carrying a lot of cargo up there. You know, but they're also, they're wasting a lot of stuff. Did you know? One of the articles talks about the sheer amount of waste that goes on at the ISS. And this is one I really love.
Yeah, we talked about this
last time. We talked about this a couple of times back. And one of the things, you know, they do not wash their uniforms up there.
They throw them away.
They throw them away.
It totally goes against every recycling program that, you know, all the kids are learning.
But they are recycling their pee. They're drinking their pee now.
Yeah.
So they're kind of working towards.
All the kids are going, ew. But I've gone past that because you know I already seen all your specs and all that. So.
Well, yeah, that's true.
So.
And of course, there are engineers. We talked last week about them starting to learn to
recycle
the fecal matter as well into fuel and drinking water.
But
a lot of people do.
Eventually, we'll be okay with that.
That's right. But
as long as they don't know.
The thing is, this focus.
I wouldn't drink here, so there you go.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Especially after a day of Doritos and salsa.
And salsa and pancakes and bacon.
Yeah.
It's been big time.
Oh boy, that was a long day. But anyway, and we're paying for it today, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
But I think so long as we are bound into this engineering approach for engineering reasons, in the slow and plodding methodology of the scientific method, we are going to be forever caught in the cycle that NASA, JAXA, ESA, Roscosmos, and now China are all pushing forwards with rovers that move a few inches a day at most. And this is not the way for us to progress,
you know,
to build a multiplanetary species, as Elon Musk has said we need to do.
As a business owner, I just can't fathom that a couple inches a day is considered good under any business.
What do you consider the damage that the rover has been taking, even at that few inches a day? That's challenging. It's very challenging.
I mean, where's your ROI there?
There isn't any. It's about the data. It's about the knowledge gain.
Data on 2 inches? Come on.
It's not 2 inches. It's at least 8.
Only making it bigger than it really is. You men.
Hey, when men talk about inches, you got to be careful.
Yes. Don't you want any men around?
Oh. So there is a mindset change that I think, a paradigm shift, that we're on the verge of making. I think that we will see this happen in the coming years as we watch these crowdfunding efforts to build programs, as we watch people come up with things to really press forward to go to the moon and Mars, things to do at orbit. These are things that will drive us, will lead us further along the path to becoming a multiplanetary species.
I have a lot of mundane just who ask me questions like, Well, nobody wants to go to Mars. Why would anybody want to go to Mars?
Was it two years ago or three when Mars Inspiration, or no, when the scientists proposed that you could cut the cost to Mars almost in half by sending the astronauts one way, and then this whole hullabaloo. That very night, as I recall, there was an article that mentioned that there were over several hundred people who emailed that night.
100,000. A couple hundred thousand.
No, it wasn't that much. No, that was the response to Mars Inspiration.
Oh, okay.
That was the applications they received.
Well, that's still amazing.
But the original scientific paper that proposed sending a one-way mission got several hundred responses in the very first night by email saying they would go on the one-way mission.
There you go.
You know,
that's what I tell these people.
Indeed.
There are people who really want to go.
Yes.
Why would they want to go? Because they don't have a cushy life like you do.
Like I do?
I'm talking about these people who ask me these silly questions.
Well, like these engineers do. They have their careers. They've been in...
Right, this is something they've always aspired for.
And I remember sitting in front of the TV in 1969 watching that landing on the moon.
Yeah, and, you know, for generations we have thought we would be there by now.
And I've talked to many people over the years who shared that, who were there in front of their TVs as kids, and there was this sense that Mr. Cronkite and the astronauts and the people at NASA, just the awe and wonder, the sense of accomplishment, the sense that this was just the first step.
Yeah.
And yet, over the missions that followed, there were many challenges that we faced that we didn't expect. The public became bored.
Lethargic
and bored because NASA was doing this whole engineer thing.
Yeah, same thing over and over again.
Yeah. And
like deja vu.
Yeah. And we've got to look at going to the moon, going to Mars, hell, going to Callisto or Ganymede or Saturn's Titan. These are all potential destinations for people to go and ultimately live. Now, the challenges of living there are big.
Sure. The thing is, once we make the first step, we cannot forget to continue to make a step. Because, again, that's what we did not do the first step.
And each step has to be a little bigger and longer than the last one.
Exactly. It's called, you know, making progress.
Making progress. So
we've
got to cover some
different. Your favorite phrase. Yeah?
Yes, it is.
Making progress.
Well, thank you for joining us tonight. we hope you'll come back next week for the next space.
Yes, Super Bowl or not, we don't care.
We'll be here. We will be here. So enjoy it. Enjoy your week. Come back and follow along with us as we recap the manned spaceflight news and related tech and commentary of the week
at
KWOD Radio.
So you're going to say your favorite thing?
Oh, yeah. Throughout the week, be safe, be bad, and be good at it.
That's the end of our show, and we're happy that you were here to be with us tonight. And again, we'll be here at the same time, same bat channel, next Sunday, 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. So with that, we're going to say goodnight. And yeah, just a little over an hour, so that's not too bad time. Just, I'm not quite sure what the blaring eyes are for, but but we appreciate that anyway. That little icon there. So with that, you guys have a great night and a great week, and we will see you back here again next Sunday night. It's KWOD Radio. Patty Hamilton signing out.